democracy, the right to dissent, and even practices of torture by the U.S. government and private corporations. Our guests are leading authorities in their fields from around the country and sometimes internationally. They include authors, lawyers, activists, scholars, and many more. That's Wednesday at 5 p.m. right here on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about how fasting every day in a certain way can help you lose weight in a safe way. We're also going to look at a new study about nuts and how they can reduce your risk of different cancers in the Mayo Clinic. I'll also talk about the role of vitamin D in a healthy pregnancy and a whole lot more. Always the latest cutting-edge information. I don't share with you what we review in all the different newspapers and media to make sure that we're not covering what they already cover, because that really isn't the important stuff. We share the good independent literature. There's a confusion also between science-based medicine, evidence-based medicine, so I'm going to change the term. I'm no longer going to call it science-based medicine. To make it more understandable and more accurate, I'm going to call it proprietary science, proprietary medicine, versus evidence-based. And that's because a lot of the problems we have are based upon who controls the research, who does the funding, whether it's applied or basic research. And if you are coming up with a therapy and that therapy is beneficial and it works and you have the evidence to prove it, it should be applied. But today, it's who controls the money, controls the research, controls the outcome, controls the publication, controls the patents. So we're shifting the emphasis so it's clearer. On the one hand, we have people who spend a lot of money to get you to accept a therapy that may or may not help you. And frequently some therapies, like chemotherapy, 50% of all cancer was found to be from the therapy, including the deaths from those therapies. I'll be reporting on that later. So we'll be getting into that. But all of our findings are all from major peer-reviewed literature. Then we're going to go from that to a person you probably have never heard of. His name is Victor D. Hanson, H-A-N-S-O-N. He is a leading intellectual, and he is he's a very bright man. And he is conservative, and he supports the Republican conservative agenda. That's none of my business. What is my business is he gave a speech, and I found the speech, and it talks about how the Obama presidency destroyed today's Democratic Party. I'm going to play it. And why I'm playing it is because we need to understand things that our own particular ideologies or our own leanings would not allow us to even hear. I believe he makes some very salient points. I would challenge him on many of his own beliefs, but at least he's allowing us inside the mind of one of the real intellects. And as a result of his statements, he was kind of persona non grata by a lot of the people within the conservative and Republican movement. So we're going to play that. Again, I don't believe in censorship, and I don't believe because someone is a liberal, calls themselves a liberal or a Democrat or conservative or a Republican, that everything they say, if we're the opposite, has no value. That's just foolish. We must be open to listening to what people say and to see, is it reasonable or unreasonable? Does it work or not work, in part or whole? So we're going to do that. Then we're going to take a look at, I didn't have time yesterday, but today I will, the SAT scoring and how it's a fraud. All of these entrance exams are completely worthless. And I'll explain my perspective on that. And following up with yesterday's discussion about millennials, a millennial talking to millennials, and I thought he did a pretty good job. I don't think he was heavy on solutions. And Simon Sinek, S-I-N-E-K, but I have some very fundamental and practical advice I'm going to give them. But I'm going to share some comments from Chris Hedges in Truthdig on Bernie Sanders and why he sold his soul. And I support that. I have written my own commentary, so I'll be sharing my comments and Chris Hedges to millennials, because otherwise millennials are going to fall right in line with Bernie again. Hopefully that doesn't happen. And a new study that some commonly prescribed drugs, over 203 different medications, increase your risk of depression and then suicide. And a lot of them you wouldn't be aware of. And so a lot of people saying, I don't know why I'm depressed. Are you on medications? Yeah. Which ones? Well, my doctor didn't say that my antidepressive medication or my weight loss medication or my blood pressure lowering medication would cause suicidal thoughts. We'll share that with you. But we always begin with the latest on health and healing. According to the University of Illinois, daily fasting is an effective tool to reduce weight and lower your blood pressure. And this was published in the Journal of Nutrition and Healthy Aging. Now, the study is the first to examine the effect of time-restricted dieting, a form of fasting that limits food consumption to select hours each day, on weight loss in obese individuals. To study the effect of this type of diet, researchers work with obese volunteers who had an average age of 45, and they were 35% BMI, which is body mass index, as a percentage of their body weight. And between the hours of 10 a.m. and 6 p.m., the dieters could eat any type and quantity of food they desired, but for the remaining 16 hours, they could only drink water or calorie-free beverages, and this went on for 12 weeks. Well, when compared to a matched historical control group from a previous weight loss trial on a different type of fasting, the researchers found that those who followed the time-restricted eating diet consumed fewer calories, lost weight, and had improvements in blood pressure. In fact, well, that's a good thing. But they're not the first to do this. And this is not the advice I would offer. Here's my concern. When you restrict people to certain hours of eating, let's say from 10 to 6, you're giving them 8 hours to eat, and you're saying you can eat anything you want, and you're not restricting them on the type of food or the calories in this food, what you're doing is you're forcing the body's metabolic system into a hyperextended reaction. What will often happen is that people will overeat if they skip breakfast, and they'll eat more at lunch, or if they miss breakfast and lunch, and then they'll overeat for dinner. That's bad because you're putting too much food into the body at one time. The body should have nutrients coming in about 4 times a day in smaller quantities. And the most important meal of the day is breakfast. After all, breakfast is breaking a fast. Breakfast. Now, it's not just understanding the synonym. It's understanding that your metabolism was catabolic overnight, slowing down about 10%. Your heart rate slows down. Your pulse rate slows down. Your metabolism slows down. And that's when the body cleanses, repairs. That's when all the work happens. And that's why in the morning, when you get up, most people shortly thereafter vacate a lot of the debris. Now, what's in the debris? Well, you're getting dead cells. You're getting bacteria. and you're getting undigested food, the different types of fibrous material that was not digested. And that helps cleanse the body. And around 4 a.m. in the morning, the body becomes highly anabolic, where you're beginning to wake up. You still may be in bed, but you're conscious now. You're able to think of your dreams, where before, when you're in rapid eye movement, deep sleep, you don't remember anything. And that's your healing sleep. The trouble is a lot of people, because of problems, they wake up. They break that rapid eye sleep, and that's not good. In any case, by having a beverage in the morning that gives you plant-based amino acids, and amino acids are the building blocks of protein. And there's 22 primary amino acids. Now, the amino acids in brown rice, the amino acids in a sweet potato, the amino acids in a steak are all the same. It's different percentages of each. But if you simply combined different amino acids, you're getting very high net protein utilization. So if I have some brown rice and some split pea, I'm getting a real high percentage of complete amino acids. And there's no fat. There's no arachidonic acid that can cause pain in my joints from meat. And if I put some coconut oil in there, that's helping my brain, turning off inflammation in my brain, helping prevent amyloid plaques. It's also helping with my digestive system. It's helping kill monolaurin is one of the nutrients in coconut oil. It's helping to kill viruses. In fact, for all the years that I had the Tri-State Healing Center and thousands upon thousands of people came there, I'm sure many people listening right now had been there at one time because I had Dr. Amira Gadol, the best holistic dentist in New York, in my opinion. I had a whole team of medical doctors, cardiologists, pediatricians, a psychologist. I had a massage therapist who was also a nurse practitioner. She was terrific. Colon therapist, Anita, Mitch Proffman, the acupuncturist. I had the chiropractors, Mitch Proffman. Then I had an acupuncturist, Dr. Ho. So I had all these different therapists there. And I also work with people with AIDS and who had HIV infection, full-blown AIDS. And one of the very first things that you would see is the nurses giving them drinks every hour. And in that, you would have bitter melon, which is the most powerful juice imaginable. We also managed to get from a person who was from Haiti and another person from Jamaica, their families would bring in bitter melon. That was from Puerto Rico. They would bring in jackfruit and chirimoya, and we would then make these into smoothies. And also, they bring in frozen concentrate. So these were powerful antivirals. And then there was a homeopath to give homeopathic zeolites and intravenous vitamin drips going up to 200,000 milligrams. And that was you name it, they got it. But one of the things that we saw major improvement in people's viral loads was when we gave them coconut oil, organic raw coconut oil, teaspoon each day. So coconut oil is just one of the best things you can do, period. And someone will say, yeah, but it's a saturated fat. Yes, it is, but it's a healthy saturated fat. So anyhow, I posted just as an aside, just kidding, I wanted to show the people who have HIV or AIDS-related conditions, that there are natural, non-toxic approaches. And I was working with a lot of gay doctors at the time, including the leading gay doctor in New York, Dr. Stephen Chiesa. Hundreds and hundreds of his patients I work with and help save their lives. In fact, we completely reversed all HIV. They went HIV positive, negative. We had all the blood chemistries done. It took 16 months. And we presented them at a press conference, along with 100 other people from around the United States who were long-term survivors who had improved, with their medical doctors flown in. Not a single member of the media showed up. Not a single member of any gay organization showed up. And yet 99% of the people there were gay. And the gays would tell you there was the gays that align with the pharmaceutical approach and gays that align with natural approaches. And one guy said it best. He was from California. And he said, for the last 5 years, every single person in California in my AIDS health support group died. I said, how many is that? He's over 2,000 people. And they were angry at me because I kept advocating natural approaches. I'd bring juices in. They'd tell me, don't, you know, it's the drugs you need, not the juices. And every one of them's dead. And that's when I heard about you, what you're doing here. And I came here. And he said, and I see everyone's healthy. No one's dying. No one's getting sicker. I see it. I'm sitting here every day. And yet you wouldn't know that existed. You wouldn't know any of this existed. At the very time that I'm curing people from full-blown AIDS, and no one in the gay community could cure anyone of anything like this, I was being attacked. Now think of that for a moment. Wrap your mind around that just for a moment. I'm working with and creating protocols and seeing that my medical staff treats 1,200 persons with full-blown AIDS for free. We're saving their lives. They're there every night. Arthur Ashe, Stokely Carmichael, Bill Tatum, publisher of Amsterdam New, Tony Brown, all the leading all the leading African-Americans in the communication community were there seeing. We had an open-door policy. Anybody could come, any scientist, nurse, anyone in the health field could come, talk with patients, look at their records with the patient's permission, and see what we were doing. Not a single person from the AIDS community came. Not a single person from the medical community came. Why? So while we're getting people healthy and they're killing people by the hundreds of thousands, that's genocide, using AZT. And by the way, just you understand, later when they saw how bad AZT was and protease inhibitors, they went to less toxic, but still toxic, but less toxic, and people live longer. So therefore, they credited the drugs with letting them live longer. You talk about stupid. Boy, this is just mind-numbingly stupid. You know, the fact that you're not giving a high enough dose to kill someone or cause massive symptoms doesn't mean it's helping them. It's just the body is not destroyed as quickly as it was before. There's a whole lot of scientists, 3,000 scientists, 3,000, including Nobel Prize winners in AIDS, on our side. I have them all up on my website. 3,000. MD, PhDs, Nobel Prize winners, journalists. Why don't you read what they have to say? Why don't you look at the 5-6 documentaries I did? Why don't you look at the press conference? AIDS is not a death sentence. Why don't you look at the 14-hour seminar where I brought in leading physicians from around the world, from China, from Japan, who were curing or helping people with AIDS using natural botanicals, and we had at one point, I think we have a photograph of 1,600 people. Why didn't a word of this get out? Press conference, no one comes. We have all day and all night. We started early in the morning, went clear to late at night. There are photographs of that. Documentaries, a textbook. The largest chapter in the textbook is on natural approaches to AIDS. And yet, all while I'm doing this, I'm being attacked. Peter Duisberg's being attacked. Those of us who are helping to guide people to more natural approaches for this series of killing disease, we're being attacked. Look for the evidence. It's there. Read it for yourself. And the next time some clown gets in your face, say, well, Gary Noll and these other people, yes, say, well, what about Gary Noll? Can you show me the people that you've cured, gotten healthy? He can. They're there. Read their stories. There's a video on Tony Brown. Watch them. That's how powerful propaganda is. When you can have the entire mainstream media, the New York Times, all of it, go on one side of an issue when they're completely wrong instead of looking for the truth. Well, we're now putting the truth up there so you can see that for yourself. And yet 99% of the people still go to that holistic or that regular doctor instead of a more holistic doctor for anything that bothers them. That's the power of conditioning. Separately, an article from the Mayo Clinic published in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrition Reviews shows that nut consumption, all nuts, are associated with a reduced risk of some types of cancer and type 2 diabetes, which, by the way, are two of the world's most significant public health burdens. and currently available data suggest that the prevalence is going to continue to increase. And nut consumption has long been viewed as a way to help prevent both of these diseases, diabetes and cancer. But until now, evidence has been inconsistent. Well, a new systematic review and meta-analysis just published this week shows that the more nuts you consume, the greater the reduction in cancers and serious cancers like breast cancer, prostate cancer, and ovarian cancer. And this was 36 observational studies on 30,708 patients. So endometrial cancer, pancreatic cancer, colorectal cancer, the more nuts you consume, the less likely you are to have those cancers and diabetes. So I think that's terrific. From the Sheba Medical Center in Israel, published in the American Journal of Reproductive Immunology, if you are pregnant and you want to proceed to term, the earlier in that pregnancy that you modulate your immune system with vitamin D, the better, meaning vitamin D helps you have a healthy pregnancy. It's that simple. And also from Queen's University, that's in Ireland, published in PLOS Medicine, they say that the risk of dying and of developing a number of cancers is when you drink the least amount. So drinking alcohol definitely increases your risk of dying of cancer. There is no such thing as a safe intake of alcohol. Oh, and by the way, the University of California, San Francisco did a study where women under chronic stress have significantly low levels of Clotho, that's a hormone that regulates aging and enhances cognition. And they found in a study compared to mothers of children on autism spectrum to low stress conditions. So quite simply, the researchers found that the women in their study with clinically significant depressive symptoms had even lower levels of Clotho, K-L-O-T-H-O, in their blood than those who were under stress but not experiencing such symptoms. The study was published in Translational Psychiatry. It's the first to show a relationship between psychological influence and Clotho, which performs a wide variety of functions in the body. So, just another reason to deal with stress in a constructive and a positive way. And even though it's been banned for decades, DDT exposure, according to Public Health Institute in Berkeley, increases by 400% your risk of breast cancer. Yeah, that was published in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. So that's why you should eat only organic, and you should be conscious of the environment you live in to make sure that it's not... It's not loaded up with DDT. By the way, I had an email some time ago, a week ago, a person asking about all the phthalates and oxalates, I should say, in green vegetables. And therefore, don't be drinking a lot of green vegetable juice, etc. Unfortunately, that is inaccurate information that people are spreading out on the internet. There are certain greens that if you have those only, or the majority of your diet are those greens, you're going to have a lot of oxalic acid and oxalates build up in the blood. But if you have a normal diet, you can have a full spectrum of all your greens, and the chlorophyll, the fibrous material, the natural chelating capacity, the antioxidant capacity of the greens far outweighs anything that, unless you have Quasimodo's condition or a hyperactive thyroid condition or a hypothyroid condition, it's only going to be beneficial. It's like saying, well, what if you take too much iodine? Well, if all you're eating is seaweed or if all you're eating is soy, and that's how they come to these foolish arguments. In California, there is something called Proposition 65, and it was created by a group of lawyers, completely self-serving. It's the only state in America that has this stupid law. And what they did is that if you sell a product in California and you don't have a warning label on it, that it's dangerous and can cause cancer, they'll sue you and they'll win. And you'll have to pay them hundreds of thousands of dollars. You're talking about hundreds of thousands of products that are not aware of this. And so you can't say, well, we didn't know. They're saying, yeah, well, your product has lead in it. Well, what you have to understand, it's not that somehow your product or your vegetable or whatever it is you're consuming is very high in a particular toxic chemical. One of the most abundant minerals in the world is aluminum. Now, aluminum is neurotoxic. Aluminum is a dangerous mineral. But that's when it's in a concentrated form, as if you're getting an injection with aluminum as an adjuvant to hyperpotentize the vaccine. But if you took some food that was grown on organic soil, certified organic soil, with no pesticides, you're still going to have traces of aluminum, traces of lead, traces of these naturally occurring heavy metals in the soil. They don't do a darn thing to the body. But because they exist at all, they'll say, well, you didn't have a warning. Now, interesting enough, you have a warning, you can sell it. That's how it's all about litigation. In fact, when someone approached the Attorney General of California acknowledged, yeah, this is one of those pieces of legislation that's not in any other state, but they managed to get it through here, and it's completely for the lawyers to sue people to make money. So just understand, a whole lot of what we see on the internet is not accurate. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. I like to bring variety into this program and also issues that allow us to challenge ourselves or to challenge the people making the statements. This is a known and respected conservative journalist, Victor D. Hansen, and he's doing this before a private group. He's giving a talk, but I found that what he had to say should be looked at upon why so many Democrats and liberals are putting all of their animus towards Trump. And I've said this repeatedly. I will say it again. Trump is not the problem right now. Don't put your energy on Trump. He will self-destruct. You're looking at the wrong end of the problem. The problem is a lot of people who voted for Trump, contrary to what you have been conditioned to believe, are not redneck, racist, white supremacist. That's a tiny fraction. In fact, I would, from the people I've interviewed, being out in America, going to Camden, New Jersey, and Detroit, and everywhere else, to do the programs I have done in documentaries, a lot of them were unionist, a lot of them were Democrats, a lot of them were liberal. And they believe completely, and they had voted previously for Bill Clinton, and they voted for Barack Obama. And then they were betrayed. And no matter what you say, the corporate Democratic community refuses to acknowledge this. They refuse to acknowledge that they created Trump. But they did. And they confuse also the articulate, smooth, even debonair, easy to listen to, Barack Obama. Of course, he said all that when he had a monitor, but he had a sense of humor. He seemed like a good guy, as did Bill Clinton. But don't look at what you feel about them personally. Look at the policies. That's why I played in the last 2 days. I played twice so you could really get the message. It was Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton that created the first laws back in 1993 was when it started in 1996. It was codified. And then again, George Bush, the very condemnation, and rightly so, that Laura Bush stated that this is inhumane when you lock children up and separate them from parents. Everybody agrees with that. But it was your husband that caused that. Did you have any discussion with him at that time? You know, these detention centers were not built now. These were built under Obama. And they had all these people there then. So are we selective in our outrage? Do we have a historical perspective? Are we looking at the real cause of our problems? And if we're not, how are we supposed to change them? How are we supposed to end poverty? How are we supposed to feed the hungry? How are we supposed to have a place for the people who have no homes to have a place to stay where they feel some comfort and not stressed? How are we supposed to end wars if we won't close military bases? How are we supposed to give a person the opportunity not to fear the militarization of police and 80,000 SWAT teams breaking in doors or police stopping you at will and confiscating asset forfeiture, confiscation, $4 billion in 1 year without being charged with any crime? How are we supposed to bring confidence back that cop stopping right now is not going to put a bullet in your head when a guy jumps up on the top of a car and fires 40-plus bullets into a car of an unarmed person, kills him, and walks free? Why is it almost every single cop walks free, no matter how heinous the crime, unjust the crime? Because they control the system. The people who are behind them control the system. The people behind those people, the technocrats, control the system. It really doesn't matter. Stop thinking left and right, conservative, liberal. It is irrelevant. It's the people behind those people. Who funds the Hoover Institute? Who funds the Free Enterprise Institute? Who funds American Legislative Council? Who funds the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergs? Who funds the Council on Foreign Relations? That's the person you should be concerned about. We're not even looking at it. We don't even know their names. I do. Many of you do because I've done investigations on it. So we're distracted. We're not looking right now that there are children dying, being blown to bits and starved to death in Yemen. And the United States is there leading that, in Great Britain and Saudi Arabia. We're not looking at any of the important issues because we don't stop, go to neutral, and look for the truth. We align immediately with our ideologies, and we filter everything else out. That's why I'm doing this. So listen to this man, find what you would agree or disagree, because then you're going to have a chance to call in after he talks and share your points of view.
We are in strange, strange times. And the question is, what brought this along? Why are we in this state of perennial crisis? Part of it is that the Democratic Party had misjudged both the symbolism and the actual record of Barack Obama. He came in as the most liberal voting senator in the U.S. Senate, even though it was a little more than 2 years. He was not in the center of the party as had been maybe center-left as Bill Clinton. And from 2009 to 2016, he moved the Democratic Party far to the left. What do I mean by that, rather than just, you know, issuing these rhetorical statements? I mean by that that he took over the healthcare system and tried to nationalize it. It was pretty effective in doing so. We doubled the debt to $20 trillion. We have almost de facto zero interest rates. We enlarged the size of the federal government. And by the way, those were the critical mechanisms we'd always use in the past to achieve 3% economic growth. You could prime the pump by having very low interest rates. You could prime the pump by running large deficits. You could prime the pump by spreading entitlements and unemployment insurance. And we've used all three, and we never achieved 3% growth. First president in modern history who has not been able to do that. And then abroad, it was basically Obama's belief that the United States in some way in the post-war order had been culpable. So whether it was the Middle East, Obama basically thought that the Iranians and the Shia were revolutionary people and they were oppressed in the way that people had been oppressed in the United States, and it was time to even the ledger, so to speak. And so he pulled away from the Sunni Gulf monarchies, Jordan and Egypt, Israel especially, and tilted toward Iran on the belief that this was a revolutionary government and we could give concession after concession after concession without telling the American people what Ben Rhodes said was the echo chamber that they created through journalism. And then we could delay the development of a nuclear weapon until after Obama had left office. There was reset with Russia. There was a Libyan bombing in Benghazi. There was a Cairo speech. There was the outreach to Venezuela, but especially Cuba. And it's all can be summed up by the idea that the United States had been culpable, and it was time that somebody recognized that its preeminent role in the world was neither warranted nor moral. In that calculus, people forgot something, that was not in tune with the American people. So quite soon after that election, Democrats did a very funny thing. They were no longer empirical. Had they been empirical, they would have said, well, we're going to run Obama because he's young, he's charismatic, people would like the idea of having the first African-American president, and most importantly, there's widespread anger at the Iraq War. There's widespread doubt and uncertainty because of the September 14th, 2008 meltdown. There's widespread uncertainty because this is the first election in almost 40 years where there is not an incumbent vice president or president running for election. It's an orphaned election, and so it's wide open. And Obama has a chance in a time when his message and his record would not have a chance. So in other words, they didn't say themselves, while he is a landmark personal figure, the agenda and the cargo he brings is way to the left of the American people. And then they learned to their bitter disappointment that Obama, being a narcissist and self-involved, was worried about Obama's popularity, which is much lower each month than was George Bush's, until 2016, when the bright idea came into his head, when he was about 42% approval rating in January, that the less you heard of Obama, the less you saw of him, the more you liked. And he turned over the international stage to Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, and for the first time he went way up in popularity, 52%. All that hid the fact that the record and the agenda was not something that the American people wanted. And I'm not just saying that again. Over that eight-year period, he lost 98 state legislatures, 32 governorships, the House, the Senate, now the presidency, and the Supreme Court, 1,100 local and state elections, the Democrats did. They have less political power than any time since 1920, and yet they're enamored with Obama still. Los Angeles wants to name a boulevard after him. The Democrats should not name a boulevard after him. The Republicans should name a boulevard after him. Because he's been the greatest gift to the conservative movement that we've ever seen. And so they're frustrated. They love Obama, but they discovered in this election that his election formula, ginning up block minority voting in the inner city on a message of anger and unfairness and culpability on the part of America, was not transferable to a 69-year-old multimillionaire white woman engaged in scandal like Hillary Clinton. So she inherited all the downside of turning off the white working classes and the middle classes in general. All she did was she rebranded the clingers into the irredeemables and the deplorables. And that's okay if you can get 96% of the black vote, 76% of the Hispanic vote, 72% of the Asian vote, and they register and come out. But if they don't, and they feel that Hillary Clinton does not resonate in a tribal sense like Barack Obama did, then she got the downside of Obama, and she didn't get the upside. And so she lost the election. And so the Democrats look at themselves and they say, Obama is such a wonderful person, but we've lost all political power the last 8 years. the formula that we thought, remember these books that were published, the next 50 years of democratic reign, the new democratic supremacy? It doesn't happen. And now they're frustrated because they don't know how to interpret the past that was so unkind to them. And yet, in these four special elections we've had, they haven't hit on a formula. And to add insult to injury, the emissary of their unhappiness is a guy with orange skin, yellow hair, a tie too long, a billionaire Manhattan real estate person who is running as a populist and who has a vocabulary of about 1,000 words that includes tremendous, great, awesome. In class terms, because remember now, the Democratic Party is a pyramid. It's a medieval party. It's got a small capstone of wealthy, wealthy people who live on the coast, Silicon Valley, Hollywood, Wall Street, whose main article of faith is they have a utopian vision that they push with the assumption that the ramifications of their own ideology never apply to themselves. They're big global warmers, but they do not want to give up their corporate jets. They believe that no one should have school choice, but they want to put their kids in a private academy, et cetera, et cetera. So that group detests Donald Trump. His accent's from Queens. He eats fast food. He gobbles down Haagen-Dazs and supposedly has two scoops and only gives you one. And this cultural and class disdain extends even to our colleagues, many of my colleagues, some of my best friends that I've known for 25 years in the conservative movement. Because I can tell you that all conservative institutions, perhaps this one, I know it happened at the Hoover Institution, I'm on the Bradley Board, I'm associated with National Review, sort of associated with, there were 9 senior writers, and I kept finding myself 8-1, 8-1, 8-1 in my willingness to vote for Donald Trump. But the point is that the conservative elite found him unpalatable. And they couldn't deal with this paradox. The message, messenger, message, messenger, message, messenger. They were convinced that to justify their own class disdain for Trump, they could say that he really wasn't conservative. And indeed, in the 80s and 70s, he'd said some very liberal and stupid things. He said he wanted to impeach George W. Bush at one time. But he ran on a conservative agenda, and there was no chance that he was going to, as alleged by Never Trump Republicans, he was going to appoint his sister to the Supreme Court. Or he was going to try to create a bigger health care plan than Obama. It's things like that. It just wasn't going to happen because he was on record. And what they were, I think, a little upset was Trump made an argument, and it was unpalatable because he said the Republican opposition to Obamaism and the shift from democratic liberalism to radical progressivism was not halted by the Republican establishment. I don't know if that's what they could have halted it, but they surely halted it politically. And Trump's message was, if you win 1,100 elections and you win the House and Senate, you've repudiated this Obama movement, and yet when we look at it, the culture, the civilization, the issues are all incredibly moving left. Obama said this, I do not believe in gay marriage in 2008 and 2015. If you didn't believe in LGBT bathrooms, you're a homophobe. That's a radical shift. And so Trump comes along and says, again, a billionaire with orange skin and this yellow hair, and he has this weird accent, awesome. And he says, there's too many people that are victims of globalization. And so when I hear my colleagues on the Republican right and the elite, they all say, he's anti-free trade. And I'd always ask them, do you, Mr. or Mrs. wake up in the morning and somebody says, you know that column for 750 words that your livelihood depends on? We just outsource it to a guy in Korea. He can do a much better job for $100. Doesn't happen to us, does it? And as I said to another person, when you want to get your kids into... You say affirmative action's kind of bothersome, but you're willing to put up with it. When you get your child and they grow up in Bakersfield, they have a straight A average, and they can't get into Stanford with high test scores, do they call somebody they know at Stanford? You do, and you do, and you do, and they do. And so we had an elite on the coast that can navigate around these liberal landmines, and they felt they weren't too bad. Take illegal immigration. I had great arguments with many people in the conservative movement, and they said, well, comprehensive immigration, the position of Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush. And I said, that's fine. How many times has somebody hit your car and left the scene of an accident? One, two, three? How many times have you woke up in the morning and you found a dead person in your orchard? One, two, three? How many times have your kids had to go to school with metal detectors? How many times has somebody who's a second or third generation Spanish person, Mexican American, told you that they're moving out of your hometown because there's too many illegal immigrants? How many times do you think people have told you that they're going, that of Mexican American extraction, they're going to vote for Donald Trump? 45%, I think, in some counties in Fresno, Central California. So we had created an elite that was somewhat distant, as wonderful as their support for the main conservative agenda was, and they missed entirely this idea that Donald Trump was a viable candidate. Came to me, I mean, he wasn't, I guess we've all used, if you use this word, I've used it to death. I've said, Donald Trump was not my first choice in the nomination. But after the nomination was over, it was between Hillary, he was so much preferred. Yes, we all say that, except the Never Trump people. But Donald Trump hit on something: trade, jobs, illegal immigration. And what it, what his message was is a particular subset of middle America between the two coasts always pays the price for someone else's smug idealism. And the problem is it's not just left wing anymore, it's people in the Republican establishment.
Okay, I thought you would find that interesting because what we're hearing there is we're hearing Victor D. Hansen, a leading journalist within the conservative movement, inside of a group, a private group. We hear their thoughts. We can agree or disagree, but at least we know what they're thinking and how they're thinking. What was his real message? His real message was that the leaders, all of the leaders of the conservative and Republican movement, hated Donald Trump. All of the people supported another candidate wanting to be president, and they wouldn't support Trump. There was no industry that gave him money. None of the big shots gave him money. In fact, it would be some very wealthy people out of Israel who gave him the largest amount of money, and they'll go conservative or liberal. They don't care as long as you protect their agenda, like the casino industry. And here, on the other hand, we had the entirety. Now, think of this for a moment. This is where your discussion begins. Hillary Clinton had the entire bureaucracy, the technocracy. These are the technocrats, the best and brightest, highly educated, coming from our Ivy League schools, who go into Washington as career positions. They're there to be embedded in policy-making decisions or opinion-leading decisions. They're not there to answer phones and to work on committees. They're not the bureaucracy. They're there to oversee the bureaucracy on behalf of the person who has been elected and therefore protected. Right now, we see a full-blown coup d'etat being exposed. You think that people will be discussing this, and they're not. The deep state has finally emerged from the swamp. We see them. We have them on record. The Justice Department's Inspector General has actually identified them. You know, this person said this and did this and did this. Well, that was, they weren't supposed to do that. No, that's illegal. That's correct. Are they going to be held accountable as you or I would be? Probably not. But at least we know this. So if every industry in America, Wall Street, the entire Wall Street community, wanted Clinton, the entire industrial medical complex, all the big pharma, the insurance industries and hospitals all wanted Clinton, the entire energy sector, gas, coal, hydrofracking, and nuclear wanted Clinton, all your biggest businesses wanted Clinton, all the Hollywood establishment wanted Clinton, the whole world wanted her. So why is it she didn't get elected? And here's what people engaged in cognitive dissonance don't understand. they're living in denial of the actual cause. They left out what he was talking about between the coast, between the elitist in Washington and Wall Street and Long Island and Martha's Vineyard and Washington, D.C. and the suburbs of Virginia, and between Silicon Valley and San Francisco and L.A. That's where a lot of Americans live, and they have been screwed, lied to, and abused by the Democrats and liberals for 50 years. And they simply said enough, and we refuse to accept that, because then we would have to say that the entire corporate Democrat establishment is a fraud, and it has been. But why didn't anyone see it when it was happening? Why did they continue to elect it? I'll get in that in another meeting, because discussion, because a friend of mine was one of the most powerful corporate Democrat funders in American history. And we had a long 8-hour conversation at this person's estate in Long Island, because I wanted to let him know what I knew of Bill Clinton. He said it didn't matter. I said, it doesn't matter? He said, no. We don't care what he's done, who he's done it to. We don't care. He was selected by Harriman, Mrs. Harriman. He was selected by Fulbright. Why do you think he became a Rhodes Scholar? The guy's an idiot. He isn't. He isn't bright. But he's charming. Why do you think he never finished his Rhodes Scholarship? Why do you think he was thrown out of Oxford? We don't care. He's going to be there for the entire corporate elite and their factories and their foundations. That's why he was selected. Ah, well, have that conversation with someone and see what they say. In any case, this guy's giving us a little insight into the division within the conservative movement. That Trump was hated by an awful lot of people. Then why was he elected? Do you think that just a bunch of small, tiny percent, under 1% or less, of redneck racist supremacists elected him? You'd believe that if you watched how clips were edited and provocateurs were put in there. But that's not who voted for Trump and why. We can't be honest about anything in our society. That's unfortunate. Your turn. What do you make of this? You've had a chance to hear from the inside as if you were flying the wall. What did you learn from it? How would you challenge it? What would you agree with? What would you take issue with? 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And on the burn, in the moment I get some calls, I'll go to them. But I want to also at this time share just a few thoughts concerning why I would never vote for Bernie Sanders. Because then it's not voting for the lesser of two evils, it's also voting for someone who smiles and makes you believe that he is for you, but is not. Why? Because there are two versions of Bernie Sanders. And I think Chris Hedges says it best when he says that there is the old Bernie Sanders who mounted a quixotic campaign for the Democratic presidential nomination as a Democrat socialist who refused corporate cash and excoriated corporate Democrats. And there is the new Bernie Sanders. Now, here's where it's interesting, because the new Bernie dutifully plays by the party's rules and courts billionaires and refused to speak out in support of the lawsuit brought against the Democratic National Committee, who rigged the primaries against him. And then he turned right around and endorsed Democratic candidates who espoused the economic and political positions he once denounced. Now, Sanders' metamorphosis began in December 2015 when he saw the groundswell of support for his candidacy and thought he would win the nomination. He dropped the fiery socialist rhetoric that first characterized his campaign. He had given two speeches on democratic socialism shortly after he announced his candidacy in May of 2015, and he hired established Democrat Party consultants like Ted Devine, who ironically played a role in the creation of the superdelegates that helped fix the nomination victory for Hillary Clinton. He would spend tens of millions of dollars, the some $230 million he raised during the campaign, on professional consultants. And when it was clear he would lose, Sanders and his influential campaign manager, Jeff Weaver, began coordinating closely, you guessed it, with the Clinton campaign. He knew at that time that he had been illegally, not just unethically and immorally, he had been illegally denied the nomination. So by May of 2016, Sanders had muted his criticism of Clinton and surrounded all of the base and said, now submit yourself to the Democratic Party machine. He's been an obedient servant of the party establishment ever since. Why? Because Sanders was always problematic. His refusal to condemn imperialism and the war industry, a condemnation central to the message of the socialist leader Eugene V. Debs, meant his socialism was stillborn. It is impossible to be a socialist without being an anti-imperialist. But as at least Sanders addressed the reality of social inequality, which the Republican and Democratic establishment pretended did not exist, he returned political discourse to reality and restored the good name of socialism. And for that, I commend him. Weaver and Clinton's campaign manager, Robby Mook, built a de facto alliance in the weeks leading up to the convention. And as the convention was about to begin, WikiLeaks exposed the Clinton campaign's non-aggression pact with Sanders' campaign. And many Sanders delegates, by the time they arrived in Philadelphia in July 2016 for the convention, were enraged at the theft and fraud orchestrated by the DNC. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and the DNC chair and the architect of the theft, stepped down. Some DNC staff members were fired. Sanders delegates were deluged on the eve of the convention with messages from the Sanders campaign to be respectful, not to disrupt the nominating process, and to support Clinton. Messages that often turned out to have been written by, not Sanders, by Clinton staffers such as Mook, and then sent out under Sanders' name. Sanders was a dutiful sheepdog herding his disgruntled supporters into the embrace of the Democratic Party machine, and the scope of the fraud in the primaries was breathtaking. Donna Brazile, who took over the DNC after Wasserman Schultz was removed, later revealed the existence of a joint fundraising agreement among the DNC and the Hillary Victory Fund and Hillary for America. Now, I have a copy of that. I'm going to read it to you real quick. The agreement signed by Amy Dacey, the former CEO of the DNC, and Robby Mook, with a copy to Mark Elias, specified in exchange for raising money and investing in the DNC, Clinton would control the party's financing and strategy and all the monies raised. Her campaign had the right of refusal of who would be the party communications director, and it could make final decisions on all the other staff. The DNC also required to consult with the campaign about all other staffing budget. So in essence, Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, controlled the entire Democratic establishment, the machine. It was theirs once again. And Sanders' capitulation in the face of the overwhelming evidence of the rigging of the nomination process was political, moral cowardice. He missed his historical moment, one that should have been him denouncing a corrupt, corporate-dominated party elite and walk away to build a third-party candidacy. Sanders, in my opinion, will never recover politically. To see the future, he has only to look at the campaign events he held on behalf of Clinton after a nomination. His crowds dwindled from thousands to a few hundred after he endorsed Clinton. Data collected by Harvard Harris Poll charted the downward spiral of his favorability ratings as he became more and more oblique to the Democratic Party establishment. So he may be running again, but I hope that the people in this audience will pass the word, support true people, not these sellouts like Sanders. Support people who will challenge the established, challenge the two-party duopoly, and let's get us someone who is a true populist. Don't focus upon Trump. This man will self-destruct in time. Focus upon unity, cooperation, conciliation, and progressive ideals. And then let's see if those people who voted for Trump because they were angry at Obama and angry at Clinton and betrayed by the Democratic and liberal machine will now see that their people will not betray them, will not lie to them, will not manipulate them. Sorry, we had no calls, so I couldn't take any. Hope you all had an interesting program. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a nice day.